Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. A couple of topics today. First up, are mosquitoes worse this summer in Florida? To find out, we'll talk to Pinellas County Mosquito Control. And later in the show, we'll hear about water in Florida. Tomorrow, the board of the Suwannee River Water Management District will decide whether to renew a permit for a company representing Nestle for taking 1 million gallons of water a day from a North Florida spring system to bottle for sale on supermarket shelves. We'll get the latest about that battle there, and we'll also take your calls. We'll take your calls later in the show, but here's the telephone number if you want to get ready. The number is 813-239-9663. During the show, you can also email dj@wmnf.org, and you can text 813-433-0885. Please sign your name. Does it seem like there are more mosquitoes this summer than normal? We'll find out why that seems so. We'll start this show with an interview I did late last week with Pinellas County Mosquito Control Education Outreach Specialist Alyssa Barrow.
I want to welcome you to WMNF, Pinellas County Mosquito Control Education Outreach Specialist Alyssa Barrow.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. What can you tell us about the mosquito season this year? Are there more mosquitoes in Pinellas County and in the region than normal?
So that's one of the really interesting things about this year. So we have experienced a dramatic increase in the number of service requests we get. And usually that's tied to really high mosquito populations or something else happening, such as when Zika hit Florida. However, this year, we have really average numbers of mosquitoes, and even in some months such as June, we actually had below average numbers of mosquitoes. Part of that was because, as you all know, we didn't really get that rain that we typically get earlier in the season. It stayed relatively dry until recently. So the breeding habitat that's typically around the county that increases with all those rains, it just really wasn't there, but we were still seeing a lot of complaints about mosquitoes. The unique thing about this year is that with those mosquito complaints, what we saw is that the majority of those are tied to container breeders, which are the mosquitoes that are specially adapted to live around people. And they're the ones that live in your backyard and in clogged gutters and any other kind of container around your yard.
Part of the reason that you might be getting more calls is simply because more people are at home or they're spending time near their houses outdoors because of COVID-19.
Exactly. And that's one of the unique things that we've seen this year. We really think that a lot of these complaints are stemming from those mosquitoes that are there. They may have been there all along, but one thing that's happening is because people are working from home, maybe their kids are staying home this summer instead of going to camps. People are spending a lot more time at home and outdoors in their backyard, and they're starting to see a lot of these mosquitoes.
Well, since we're talking about COVID-19, I think we know the answer to this, but I might as well get you on the record talking about it. Can mosquitoes transmit the coronavirus?
That's a great question, and that's one that we want to always address and make sure everybody knows that we're not worried about mosquitoes transmitting COVID-19. They don't transmit COVID-19 or that virus. So at least we don't have to worry about mosquitoes in that respect.
We're speaking with Alyssa Barrow, Mosquito Control Education Outreach Specialist with Pinellas County, and this is WMNF Tampa. You're listening to WMNF's Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. Well, you were mentioning containers a few minutes ago, so why don't you tell people some of the most common places where mosquitoes can breed and what you can do around your house to make that less of an opportunity for mosquitoes?
Absolutely. So mosquitoes only need, and especially these mosquitoes that are container breeders, only need a bottle cap of water to breed. That's not very much water, as you can see. So what you need to do is you need to look for any source of water. So the big ones that we always think of are if you have clogged gutters, that can be an issue. Bird baths, pet dishes, and even flower pot saucers. So especially if it hasn't been raining and you've been watering your flower pots, or if we have had even a slight drizzle, I think that water that collects at the bottom can always breed mosquitoes. Some special things to think about is if you have bromeliads, that center portion that creates a dip where water collects can also breed mosquitoes. The big thing that you can do with a lot of these is if it's something like a bird bath where you want to keep water in it, make sure to flush it out just once a week. You don't need to do it every time it rains. Flush it out once a week, and that will break the cycle of mosquitoes. For others, if you can dump the water, absolutely dump it. And if you can't dump it, one of the best suggestions I have, including for those bromeliads, is you can, at any kind of home improvement store, find a granular product that is called BTI, is the active ingredient. Now, that's a soil bacteria that has been isolated, and it's specific just to mosquitoes and black flies. So this is safe around pets. It's safe around your children. It's even safe for frogs and other wildlife and birds. So you can use that and sprinkle that inside of something like a bromeliad and control mosquitoes that way.
Why does flushing the water out break the cycle of the mosquito? Tell us more about the mosquito life cycle and how it uses this water.
Absolutely. So these mosquitoes in specific will lay their eggs along the water line of any of those containers. As the water hits those eggs, they hatch. And no matter what kind of mosquito you are, any kind of species, you need to live in the water when you're a larva and a pupa. So those stages you can think about in terms of a butterfly life cycle that everybody's more familiar with. Same life cycle, it's essentially like the caterpillar in the chrysalis state, only they do this in the water. So by dumping that water or flushing it, or by adding the BTI, which they ingest, and it actually, unfortunately for them, rips them open from the inside because it produces this crystalline structure, that will take care of the mosquitoes before they ever become an adult to bite and become a nuisance.
How much longer does mosquito season last?
Unfortunately, because we live in Florida, this is a year-round thing. However, in terms of when the peak mosquito season is, we're really hitting our stride right now, especially with these rains. So we can expect to kind of see higher mosquito populations through part of the fall, at least until October. So it's really good to remain vigilant and get out there once a week and be dumping the standing water.
We're speaking with Alyssa Barrow, who's Mosquito Control Education Outreach Specialist with Pinellas County, and you're listening to WMNF's Midpoint. Alyssa, what can you say about the diseases that mosquitoes can transmit? What are some of the diseases that humans should be concerned about?
So here in Florida, some of the diseases that can actually be transmitted year-round, but currently we're in the peak season for, would be something like West Nile. That typically peaks in September around our area. However, it starts transmission heavily around July, August, and in through September. Part of that is because things like eastern equine encephalitis, another disease that we want to think about, and West Nile, those are typically transmitted from bird to mosquito to bird. When we have a lot of the birds that come through here for migration, they can pick up West Nile in a different part of the country and bring it here, but it's also endemic here, which means it's currently cycling at all times of the year. So whenever mosquito populations get a lot bigger, a mosquito can go from biting an infected bird to biting a human and being able to transmit something like eastern equine encephalitis or West Nile. Some of the other ones that we think about are, say, dengue. You may have heard that in South Florida, down in the Keys, they're having some dengue cases currently, and things like Zika. These are all passed by those container mosquitoes that we talked about that we really want to make sure we're dumping out standing water for. Now, these diseases aren't something that are currently cycling in our area. It's not something that we see all the time, but it does pop up because people will travel to an area, get bit by an infected mosquito, and bring it back. Because we have those mosquitoes that can transmit it, we want to make sure that we're not bringing back a disease and then harboring those mosquitoes that can start the disease cycle here.
Are there cases of West Nile in the Tampa Bay area right now?
Currently, I haven't seen any human cases of West Nile, and as of this past week, our sentinel chickens, which we use to detect any kind of antibodies to triple E, eastern equine encephalitis, West Nile virus, and St. Louis encephalitis, we haven't seen any positives on those sentinel chickens in Pinellas County.
In Broward County, though, there are cases this week that, I'm not sure if you've heard this, but there are cases in Broward of West Nile, so it is actively spreading in Florida.
Absolutely. It is actively spreading in Florida. And actually, like I said, this is exactly the time of year you want to be especially vigilant for it, because starting in July and definitely peaking in September, this is where we really start to see West Nile.
Well, as we talk about mosquitoes and mosquito control, what can you say about the types of mosquito control that the county does, that Pinellas County does, for example? How does the county keep mosquitoes in check?
So that's a really great question. So what the county does is we focus on attempting to get mosquitoes before they ever become an adult. And the reason for this is because as an adult, they're already a nuisance and they can spread diseases. But we also have a lot more environmentally friendly tools and different tools in our toolbox that we can use to control mosquitoes as larvae as opposed to as an adult. Now, we do integrated mosquito management, which means that we use a lot of different methods, starting with trying to encourage people to dump out standing water. So education is part of that. And the other is that when mosquitoes are larvae, we can use things such as BTI, which we talked about, and some other insect growth regulators such as methoprene is another one, which it prevents mosquitoes from becoming an adult. They stay in that juvenile stage forever until they're unable to continue. So we try and look for breeding habitat, and we're always checking them. So our technicians, their job is to go to sites that we know breed consistently and treat as they come up on those. And they also do service requests. So one of the things that can help out citizens is that if you're experiencing mosquitoes, you can contact us and we'll come to your house. And not only will we show you what problem we found with mosquitoes, but also we'll treat it for free. None of that is at an extra cost to a citizen.
How is methoprene applied?
Methoprene is typically applied in a granular form.
By hand,
We have a couple of different options, so you can apply it by hand. Most of our larvicides are going to be in a granular form. Sometimes they can be mixed with water. We actually have a truck with a device that's called an A1. And essentially what this does is it takes those kind of granular forms, you mix it with water, and it produces a very fine droplet that shoots it out with a fan out into the breeding habitat. So it's able to get those tiny pockets of water. Like I said, they only need a bottle cap of water. And this is still using that BTI, that soil bacteria, instead of using something else. So that's one way that we can apply it. It can also be done by our helicopter. So if you live in Pinellas County, you may have seen a helicopter that's flying around that's mosquito control. We do not ever spray out of the helicopter. That's a common misconception that we have an aerial spray program. So we'll never control adults through the helicopter. It's all those granular products such as BTI or methoprene that we're applying to larger areas such as swamps, where getting in there to do it by hand or with a backpack is not feasible.
What are the side effects then of methoprene?
So in terms of methoprene, when it's used at the rate that you use for the label and what we use it at, it is specific to mostly mosquitoes. It doesn't have alterations on top of that to other insects. So this is very, it's very specific to mosquitoes used at the rate low enough to just affect them.
I got a press release from Hillsborough County Mosquito Management, and that press release said that they would be applying aerial applications of a chemical called Dibrom to control adult mosquitoes. Does Pinellas County use Dibrom, and what do you know about that chemical?
So we don't use Dibrom. We do adulticide, but we, unlike some of the other counties around us, other counties will utilize something like an aerial program. They'll fly with it. We only do this through fogging trucks. So we do this between the hours of 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. And the purpose of that is to avoid people and pollinators. So during that time period, you're not going to have, bees are typically inside their hive. Most people are not out and about. And we will spot treat different areas that have either virus activity or a very high population of adult mosquitoes using a truck and using ULV fogging. However, we don't specifically use that chemical, no.
Do you know anything about the chemical and what its effects might be?
I would have to look at the actual label for that one.
Finally, can residents opt out of getting their neighborhoods fogged?
No, residents cannot opt out of getting their neighborhood fogged. We fog specifically as a spot treatment, like I said, for virus activity and for really high populations of mosquitoes, which can lead to transmission of virus. So when we do this, it's really only to knock down the adult population to for a very brief time so that we do not have anybody getting sick. It's a public health measure.
Well, Alyssa Barrow, is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about mosquitoes in Pinellas County and how people can control mosquitoes in their yards? Anything else you'd like to add?
I would just like to remind everybody that it's great to be dumping out your standing water once a week. You know, it definitely helps not only you, but it can help your neighbors. So always encourage your neighbors around you to dump out standing water as well. These container breeding mosquitoes obviously are really difficult for Pinellas County Mosquito Control to take care of without having service requests because they're in people's private property. So if you dump out standing water and if you have an issue, you can give us a call for a service request. Again, we come out, we'll show you where we're finding the mosquitoes, we'll treat for free, and we will go to other houses in your neighborhood to look for more of the issue. So please give us a call. You can give us a call at 727-464-7503. You can also get us on C-Click Fix at any time.
Well, Alyssa Barrow, thank you so much for coming on WMNF's Midpoint. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's Pinellas County Mosquito Control Education Outreach Specialist Alyssa Barrow. And if you missed any of this interview, you can watch it on our website, WMNF.org. You're listening to WMNF Tampa. This is Midpoint Monday. It's 12:22 in the afternoon. I'm Sean Canaan. In just a few minutes, about 1 or 2 minutes, we're going to get to our next guest. And that is, we'll be talking about the topic of Nestle taking water from Florida Springs and bottling it and selling it on grocery shelves. But right now, I want to answer three of the questions that came in during that interview. First of all, one person was asking what the name of that compound was, BTI. That's B as in boy, T as in Tom, I as in India. And it's a type of bacterium, as she mentioned. It's a bacillus bacterium. And it only works on mosquitoes, is what she said to us. Also, Michael in Tampa writes in, an old tried and true method of ridding mosquitoes from bromeliads: buy the cheapest dishwashing liquid you can find, squirt some in a bucket, add water, swish it around, pour it on your bromeliads every fourth or fifth day, works fine. So that's a tip from Michael in Tampa of keeping mosquitoes out of your bromeliad water. But as our guest had mentioned, Alyssa Barrow from Pinellas County Mosquito Control, she said, you can have water in there, just flush it every few days. So those are two of the questions that came in. And we also have a comment here from David who says, first of all, Sentinel Chicken is a good band name, so thank you for that comment, David. He also writes, second, it's weird how we've seen very few skeeters in Tampa's Seminole Heights neighborhood this summer, and I think it's because the rain has missed us a lot this year. I also seem to see the city county skeeter fogger truck coming down my street late at night more often than before. So those are three of the comments that came in during that interview. But right now I want to, there's one more message that just came in. Moths are pollinators, and they're active at night. That's why I left Pinellas County 30 years ago, says Michael in Tampa. So that's something to pay attention to as well, that moths might be affected. And we also are getting, does running water in a fountain control mosquitoes, asks Bev in, I'm not sure where that email is from, but Bev writes, asks that question. I don't know the answer to that, but I think the running water in general might help control the larvae, especially if it's replaced, if there's a drain and it gets flushed. I don't know the answer for sure, but you might want to make sure that you flush the water she recommended every week or so to make sure that the larvae that are growing in there get dumped and that new water gets in. Well, we're going to turn now to our next topic. The giant multinational corporation Nestle might be allowed to bottle more water from a North Florida spring system, just not as much as it had hoped. That's what could happen tomorrow if the board of the Suwannee River Water Management District accepts the recommendations of its staff. Nestle's water application actually comes through a company called Seven Springs Water. And the website Ocala.com, the newspaper, points out that Seven Springs family members own the Ginny Springs Park, which is the system through which the Nestle would be withdrawing this water. And they're seeking a permit to take as much as 1.152 million gallons of water a day from the spring system. And joining us now to talk about this is Marilee Mulwitz-Gibson with the group Our Santa Fe River. Welcome back to WMNF's Midpoint, Marilee.
Well, it's good to be back, Sean. Thank you for having me with your guests today, or with your listeners today. I appreciate this.
Yeah, I'm so glad you could come on to talk about this important topic that we've been following, but we're going to get an update today and maybe give it a little bit of background. So many of our listeners will be familiar with Nestle bottling water from springs in Florida, but why don't you tell us where we are in this process? Where is Nestle bottling water from Florida springs, and where do they want to renew this permit?
Sure. So the renewal of this particular permit that we're in battling right now is in the Ginny Springs complex. It's actually referred to around here as the Devil's Eye, Devil's Ear complex, which represents more than just one or two spring vents that are located on within the Ginny Springs property that surrounds it. Ginny Springs Outdoors, the campground. It also impacts Blue Springs, Rum Island Springs, July Springs, Sawdust Springs. There's a number of springs in this vicinity. Extracting this type of water at this location could certainly, well, will certainly damage the spring systems over time. And so it has been permitted. This permit for extraction was granted in the 1998. And at that time, they got 1,152,000 gallons a day. The facility today is owned by Nestle. In the past, it was owned by three other water bottling companies. At no point in time in the history of the permit for the past 20 years have they bottled more than roughly 300,000 gallons of water a day out of the system. And so when Ginny and Nestle struck a deal in 2018, end of 18, they wanted to take the full amount. Nestle does. And so Nestle also extracts water at Crystal River Springs, also extracts water at Madison Blue in North Florida. Crystal's kind of in the Crystal River in the Dunn Allen I can't think of the name of the township at the moment, but kind of in the middle of the state toward the Gulf of Mexico. So if Nestle finally secures this permit, it will be in the middle of those two bottled water entities. And so they will, with this permit today, the water managers are only offering up, if you will, 984,000 gallons of water a day. They will not grant the 1,152,000. Once the wells are dug and once the water pumps are turned on, who's going to be monitoring this anyway? I mean, whether they take the full amount or don't take the full amount, the fact is that that permit gets put in, it's questionable on how much they're even taking, and the idea here is that Nestle does want to do bulk transfer to at least Madison Blue. So what people don't seem to understand locally, the ones, just a handful of people that are quote-unquote in favor of this crazy permit, is that it's not just going to be bottled at that Ginny Springs plant. It will also be bottled at this huge facility in Madison County. And so we're extremely concerned that even at 984,000, 1,152,000, that's just too much coming out of the spring system. Where the drawdown, the scientists from Seven Springs Water are even on paper saying that there's going to be a drawdown in the area of the wells of less than a half a foot. A half a foot, not a half an inch. There's a half a foot coming out of that. How can the state of Florida, the water managers who issue these types of permits, not put an end to that type of permit when we have a minimum flow and level? We have a basin management action plan. We have a priority focus area. We have water resource caution areas. We have all these outstanding Florida waterways. We have all these legislative mandated mechanisms in place for the Santa Fe River Basin, and these wells are directly coming out of the spring vents that supply the Santa Fe River and all of its aquatic systems downstream, in the stream, everywhere where that fresh water flows, including the sturgeon populations on the Suwannee, including the estuaries on the Gulf of Mexico. How this water management can even consider this permit in this day and age in 2020 is why we're going to take them to court if they vote the wrong way tomorrow.
Our guest is Merrily Mowitz Gibson with the group Our Santa Fe River, and that group opposes a permit that could be granted as soon as tomorrow for Nestle through Seven Springs to withdraw up to a million gallons of water a day from a North Florida spring system. So the staff of the Water Management District said, well, we're not going to approve a little amount, but we're going to approve what really looks like a very similar to the amount, almost a full million gallons per day. And that's four times as much as is being drawn out today, or at least on average over the last 4 years. How you've already talked about that the water levels might go down by as much as, you know, a foot or whatever it was. How is that going? Why would that affect the springs, and why would that affect the Santa Fe River?
So to be very cautious and clear, that up to a half a foot drawdown is in the vicinities of the well, because water, as everybody knows, finds its own level. So the scientists are saying, well, we're just going to take this out, even though that flow is designated, designed to go into the Devil's Ear, Devil's Eye complex, the Ginny Springs complex. It will have harm. And the reason for that is that freshwater systems rely on these types of water flows to thrive and to be healthy. And right now we're having a tremendous algae blooms. We're having low vegetation growth. We're having all kinds of changes in our aquatic systems that have been documented by the Florida Springs Institute and other researchers from UF on our water systems. I'm not a scientist, but I know from they've been telling us, Dr. Bob Knight, for instance, has said, if we reduce 30 to 40% of all of the water permits in the Santa Fe River Basin that are existing right now, they're operable, not the ones that are allocated. It's complicated, but the 1 million plus or around 1 million, that's an allocation. We're talking about the well pumps turned on. If we reduce all of the well pumps turned on at 30 to 40% in our basin, we have an excellent chance at recovery. Recovery the way that the Santa Fe River and its springs, the hundreds of springs that are located along the Santa Fe River, because it's not just the big ones that most of your listeners know about, but it's also all the smaller springs that are located to form this particular water body. So if we reduce 30 to 40%, we could actually recover. So in that vein of thinking, Nestle's taking around 300,000 gallons of water for the past 4 years, or whoever's been in there, whatever facility's been in there. So what if we reduce that amount by 30 or 40%? And why can't the water managers consider that amount instead of going to this perceived arbitrary number up in the million mark, which is what it was years ago, which had science that whatever we had in the 1990s, 1980s, when this thing was issued originally, and where we are today, we know we have a minimum flow that needs to be recovered. We know we're damaged. And so I rely on that science to explain how we're damaged. For me, I just know that when you talk to the locals and they look at the water and they look at the level of that water, they are all telling me it is so much further declining than it ever has been in the entire years and decades and generations that these families have used this water system.
Before we talk more about potential for decline of the water, why don't you give our listeners an idea? Maybe there's somebody listening who hasn't been to a pure Florida spring, or maybe it's been decades since they've been there. What are these springs like in their pristine form?
Oh, they're just the most precious, clear water systems that you will ever encounter in your life. It's like swimming in a jewel. They're primarily blue. Some of them are a little darker in color, but primarily clear. And the most interesting thing or fascinating thing that I find in springs is flow. So you sit there in a spring, and if you raise your legs up and you let the water take you, it'll push you downstream. With a tug of the water, you go downstream. And what we're missing now are a lot of our flows are decreasing. We don't have the strength that we had years ago. The springs don't have the strength to have that type of flow. They're blue, they're aqua, they used to be where the locals will talk about how they used to have a bubble at the surface water of the spring itself. It would bubble up. effervescently, in a sense, where little bubbles would pop above the water line. That's gone completely. You don't see bubbling above the water line anymore. And that's been in the recent 20, ironically, here we are talking about a permit that's 20 years old. That's been in the past 20 to 40 years that we do not have that kind of visual experience anymore. So, and that is all related to pressure. And the pressure, interestingly enough, with these springs, they're little tiny passages in the woods. Right now, during COVID, I have to say we have way too many people on this water body. It's had an extraordinary experience. Like most of the state of Florida in the outdoors, we have a lot of people going outside because, well, you know, you can't get COVID from being outside, you know, but that's another show. So the amount of humans that are using these springs is very concerning to us also. But the flow and the level is what keeps those springs healthy. And if we talk about taking water directly out of a conduit system, it's not like it's a mile or 9 miles or 10 miles from the spring vent. It is directly out of the spring vent that feeds this particular spring. And with that being said, all of our aquifers being depleted, we are over allocating permits in the basins of these incredible spring systems. And something has to change, and that's why our Santa Fe River has a really good chance of going after this particular permit. With all the love and attention everyone has given the Santa Fe River and its springs, we know that we have a track record of fighting off four other water bottling plants in the Santa Fe River, and one, we're the only organization that's done that in the entire nation, entire world. And so this was the last one we wanted to put to rest. We wanted to put it to rest years ago. A lot of people say, well, why didn't we? The little local community that tried to stop it years ago didn't have the fortitude in terms of sharing information as we do today. As everybody knows, with social media and internet, there was nothing like that back then. So you just had a handful of people trying to go up against a behemoth organization that had deep pockets. And so today we have citizens, we have public interest, we have science, we have the things that we know we can fight this permit with, and we can keep that water in the system that it should be coming out of. And as far as the argument, well, it's going to go out to sea or it's going to go out to the Gulf of Mexico, you talk to the Cedar Key Fisher people and they will tell you that fresh water is imperative that they get that for our estuaries and for the clam industry and for the industries that rely on fresh water coming out of all of the freshwater rivers and tributaries and springs from the center of the state to the Gulf of Mexico and even to the Atlantic, but primarily the Gulf of Mexico, which is where we're at.
And I don't want to get too far off topic, but a good great case study in that is the lack of fresh water flowing into Apalachicola Bay, which has shut down the fishery there.
Perfect example.
Our guest is Marilee Malwitz-Gipson with the group Our Santa Fe River. They oppose a permit that could be granted as soon as tomorrow for Nestle and its associated companies to withdraw 1 million gallons of water a day from a North Florida spring system. If you'd like to call in, the number is 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. You can text us at 813-433-0885. Later in the show, we'll talk more about how you can get involved in tomorrow's board meeting, the Suwannee River Water Management District board meeting will be online, and anyone can join. And we'll give out that information later. It'll also be up on our website later today. But I wanted to ask you, Marilee, what reasons did the Water Management District staff give for allowing the water permit? They said that there was a reasonable beneficial use.
Yeah, they refute all of the arguments that we stand on. So they said it was a reasonable and beneficial use without going into any specifics. They just cited the statute of what reasonable and beneficial is, which is a real nebulous commentary that's in the Florida statute today. And they didn't go into exactly why it would be reasonable and beneficial. Same with public interest. They carried that over for all three-pronged test matter. So reasonable and beneficial, is it in the public interest, and the third one is will it
not interfere with existing water use?
Yeah, will it harm existing water users? in the vicinity of this. And if you talk to anyone who lives in the vicinity, there are sinkholes opening up. Whether or not you can attribute it to exactly one permit, this particular one permit would be the question, but the reality is we're experiencing a death by a thousand cuts, a death by millions of gallons being extracted by all water use permits. And the bottom line with reasonable and beneficial is our water system, our water extraction needs to stay in the basins that they come from. Tampa's the same way. St. Pete's the same way. Your audience, same thing. When you take water out of your tap and you're using it in your house and you're using it in your systems and it goes back into the very place that it comes out of, that's a healthy type of water use, in a sense, for the natural systems and for you. And yes, you might have to recycle it, and yes, you might have to filter it, and you might have to clean it up, and you might have to, you know, do some things to it so that you can reuse it. But when you take it out and put it in a plastic bottle, and you send it overseas, or you send it somewhere else, and it leaves the basin completely, how is that reasonable and beneficial? That is completely an oxymoronic type of situation that we deal with day after day in our world, in our country, in our local communities. And so we have to figure out a way to keep our waters in the places that they come from, the gallonages of water in the places that they come from. And as far as public interest goes, these are the three things that they decide these permits on, by the way. Three-prong test. This is how it's being decided. And when they don't give really clear answers to how this is being decided, that's when we go to court. So the public interest. We've had nearly 400,000 signatures on at least three different petitions that circulated out in the nation. Then we had 18,000 plus signatures that went directly into the Suwannee River Water Management District portal. And the vast majority of those signatures, it was actually almost 19,000, but the vast majority were opposed to this permit adamantly for many different solid reasons. That had to do with how they use the water, how they enjoy the water, how they want to have the springs there for the next generation. Really, that we're in the public interest. As far as existing users, we have people in this community that tell me, and they've told the district, my well, because most of us are on well water, my well is now not as good as it used to be over 20 years ago. My well is, and they relate to this whole 20-year relationship from when that well water at Jenny Springs turned on, when the switch turned on. And so we also know and recognize in the past 20 years we've had a huge amount of more water use being used in North Central Florida. So we're not naive in that this one permit is the only reason why, you know, their wells are going dry or they're having sinkholes or they're having other problems. But in the immediate vicinity, when you have those types of problems, you can pretty much correlate it right to an extraction, especially if it's in that 300,000, couple hundred thousand water gallonages being pulled out from that area. I live a mile away from this facility, so roughly about a mile and a half with the crow flying. So I am an immediate impacted person. So I have a standing. We have a lot of people around here that will have standing when we take them to court. So, public interest, reasonable and beneficial, and will it harm existing users? Those are the things that the water managers need to be more, have a better argument on, because it doesn't exist in the board materials as it is today. Anybody can read these board materials. Anybody can see how this board is going to vote, because they don't get all the nuances. They just get what the staff recommends. And the materials that are in the staff recommendation is what these six water managers are going to get. Not the nine water managers. That's a whole other story. Not the nine water managers that are required to have these votes. It should be nine altogether on a board. We only have six presently.
And we'll get to why that is later in the show, but I just want to remind people that our guest is Marilee Mulwitz-Gibson. She's with the group Our Santa Fe River. They oppose a permit that could be granted as soon as tomorrow for Nestle to withdraw 1 million gallons of water a day from a North Florida spring system. And you're listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. It's 12:45 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canam. The number for you to call in is 813-239-9663. We do have some people on hold, so I want to go to the phones very soon. Also, the email is dj@wmnf.org. You can also text 813-433-0885. I want to read one or two of these texts before we go to the email. For example, Zach writes, I had no trouble getting someone on the phone line to make my opinion known about the contract. Zach says, overwhelm the phones. He gives the phone number here. I'll post that to the website rather than confusing people with too many phone numbers. I'll give that, maybe I'll say it at the end of the show, but I'll put it up on our website, WMNF.org, later this afternoon. Also, we have John writes, why doesn't state or federal government purchase land that springs are on and preserve them for the future? Look at the Everglades. So do you want to take that email question from John before we go to the phones?
Sure, and the state has been doing that, and they've been very successful with that. They acquired Blue Springs, Gilchrist Blue Springs, about 3 years ago. They are working with the Lacha Conservation Trust in our region to acquire the land around Sawdust Springs. So, and that's just two examples on our water system in this reach where this Jenny Springs complex is. There's a few other lands that they purchased around springs on the upper Santa Fe River, too. So that is something they do. In this particular case, honestly, this is all about greed. This is the Jenny Springs Outdoors that surrounds is owned by a family that, as many of your audience may or may not have visited this spring. They allow a tremendous amount of people on this property. They acquire a huge amount of revenue because they allow so many people to use this land to camp on and to party on and to do whatever they do on this land that surrounds these seven springs. So this group, this private entity, has no interest in selling their property. And the bottled water scheme was just extra money. It's kind of like fluff. It's like they're probably making close to $1 million a year because they get the money from the bottler. They get the money from Nestle. But they don't need to pay the state of Florida one dime for that water that they take out of the spring system.
Well, that goes to... Did I interrupt you?
No. I'll listen, please.
So I know we're going to go to the phones in just a second, but what you just mentioned about how much they get paid, one of our emailers writes in, is it true that Nestle only pays about $115 per year for 365 million gallons of our state's water?
That's true.
Did they have to pay a permit fee, which is, I guess, $115, but they don't have to pay any money for the actual water?
Well, let me explain just a little brief explanation. Nestle doesn't pay that. Seven Springs Water Company, a water bottling shell company that's owned by the family members of Jenny Springs Outdoors, paid that fee. They're the ones that own the permit. Nestle doesn't own the permit. The only deal they've made with Seven Springs Water Company, Nestle, is that they set up a contract which is proprietary, which was part of an administrative hearing process recently. They refused to give up the contract to make that public. And that's understandable. They're a private business, whatever. They're allowed to keep their stuff proprietary. But the point is, we have no real definitive understanding how much money Nestle is paying Seven Springs Water Company for that $115 permit that they pay once every... Well, in this case, it's going to be a 5-year permit. In the past, it was a 20-year permit. $115 for 20 years, not per year, for 20 years. And in this case, this is only going to be issued for 5 years. So it'll be $115 for a 5-year permit.
Our guest is Marilee Mulwitz-Gibson with the group Our Santa Fe River. We're talking about a permit that could be granted as soon as tomorrow for Nestle to withdraw, Nestle through Seven Springs, to Seven Sisters Springs, to withdraw 1 million gallons of water a day from a North Florida spring system. And you're listening to WMNF Midpoint Monday at 12:49 in the afternoon. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. We have Cindy in Dunedin on the line. Hi, Cindy. What would you like to say?
City, and that was very close to Itchutney Springs in the 60s to 70s, and it was gorgeous there. And now I don't even go to Springs because it's so bad. But what I wanted to talk about was the thing with putting the pesticides for the mosquitoes. I don't know if you realize that we're down on our bees. And if we lose all our bees, we lose half of our fruit and vegetables because they need to be pollinated. So I'm more concerned about that and the people that do insecticides on their lawn and things like that.
Thank you for that, Cindy. I appreciate that point. I don't know. So Marilee, we talked about pesticides. We talked about insects, mosquitoes earlier in the show. Do you have any comments that you'd like to add to Cindy's statement?
Well, the only comment I can make, because I didn't actually hear your show directly, but I do know even on the Santa Fe River, we have occasion where the Department of Environmental Protection will come in and use herbicides on the river itself for certain aquatic species. And we're not happy about it either. We have tried to work with the DEP to do some hand pulling of water lettuce, for instance, and some other hydrilla, for instance, in places that gets crowded. So we recognize that some of those, even hydrilla and even water lettuce has a beneficial use, believe it or not. I don't know how people feel about that, but manatees certainly eat these types of vegetation in the waterways. And we're very concerned about the herbicides that they're spraying on the Santa Fe River. We've gotten them to pull back quite a bit. It ebbs and flows, honestly, but there are so many other herbicide problems in the state of Florida and pesticides. We have flyovers that occur here for mosquito eradication, which it happened, I think, last year or the year before, and some of us feel our mosquito population is down, too, and we were wondering why, because we've had a lot of rains this year. It shouldn't be this normally you can't even go outside. Lately you can actually go outside and kind of, be outside, which most people would enjoy, right? But the trade-offs are horrible. The trade-off for that type of spraying that kill the bee population is just horrendous.
Thank you for that call, Cindy. Our guest is Marilee Mulwitz-Gibson with the group Our Santa Fe River. I'll go back to the phone lines in just a second. We have Andy and Wendy on hold, but I want to read this question and this comment from Ron in West Tampa. He says, I've scuba dived at Ginny between 2000 and 2002 and to think of it reduced in flow and turning a sickly lime green makes me want to weep, but I'll do what I can. That's his comment, and he asks, does boycotting existing Nestle brand waters have any positive effect on stopping them from pumping new sources like Ginny? And who can we write to in order to fight this? These are questions from Ron in West Tampa.
So I'm going to speak to your boycott first and foremost. I did meet the folks over in France that were fighting Nestle for Vital water, and they were able to work hard to get people to stop buying this stuff. In fact, that's one of our campaigns, Don't Buy This Stuff, the hashtag Don't Buy This Stuff. And so if we can get 40% reductions on the sales of Nestle, it definitely has an impact. And I think if we hit them in their pocketbook, and the first thing all of us need to understand is you can filter your tap water and you can make it so that you can enjoy it. we have become very to go to a store and buy a plastic bottle of spring water or water of any sort, for that matter, to consume it and then discard it. Nestle intends to make 6,000 plastic-filled bottles per minute. I can't even wrap my head around that. What that looks like in a room. 6,000 bottles per minute at this particular one plant. So if we can all as a nation get off the corporate teat and stop buying plastic bottles filled with our water and start dealing with our water at our source, filtering it, putting it in a reusable bottle, that, I believe, would put an end to this crazy idea of plastic bottle consumption. And as far as the lime green and the water, there are so many more factors that create that lime green component of the springs, and a lot of it has to do with nutrient loading.
A lot of it has to do with our human and animal waste byproducts, pee and poo. And so if we can figure out a way where not only farming, but everybody who camps at Ginny Springs, I don't know if you all are using the toilet, but if we can figure out what we can do with that waste and control that all over the state of Florida can answer a lot of our problems with algae and with the green waters that we're seeing, the cyanobacteria blooms and that kind of thing.
Our guest is Marilee Malwitz-Gibson with the group Our Santa Fe River. They oppose a permit that could be granted as soon as tomorrow for Nestle to withdraw 1 million gallons of water a day from a North Florida spring system. And we have several people waiting on the line. Let's talk with Andrew in Hardee County. Welcome to WMNF Midpoint Monday, Andrew.
Hey, Sean, can you hear me okay?
I can. Thanks so much for calling.
You bet. Listen, thank you for the show. Marilee, beautiful work. And I just, you know, in connection with Nestle, which is, you know, if you know anything about the actual corporate history of that organization, they are among the real world gobblers. They're the ones that are eating nature to convert it to profit. You know, they're not money over people. They're profit over planet. And they don't care. Okay? But here's something to think about with the whole bottled water scenario. And I agree with Marilee. It's just bottled water is ridiculous. It is just ridiculous. But with respect to the whole situation, and she referenced this elliptically, but, you know, we got two ways to hit back at Nestle. And one of them is on plastics, because, of course, Nestle is buying plastic from the same hydrocarbon producers that we're trying to get to, you know, to be banned from fracking, to be banned from pulling hydrocarbons out of the earth and polluting our world with them. And, of course, you know, some of those bottles end up being incinerated even in Lakeland, Florida. And so, you know, the total picture there is everything Nestle is doing is wrong. Literally everything Nestle is doing is wrong. We should be looking at having, you know, their corporate operating licenses being taken away in the United States unless they're willing to get on the right side of history. And here's another thing to consider. This is like in line with something I brought up with MCORS, but here it is, okay? You really want to hurt Nestle? Tell them they're going to have to go to a 10-cent returnable bottle deposit in glass only and just get completely away from it. Just nothing else.
All right, thank you for those comments, Andrew. Before I go back to our guest, Marilee, let's go to take another phone call. Wendy in Pasco, you've been holding a while. Thank you for coming on the show, Wendy.
Thank you for doing the show. My eyes were opened a few weeks ago. I don't buy bottled water, but I bought some, and it was a Zephyr Hills, and I happened to read everything on the bottle, and I was floored. There were 7 different bodies of water listed on the bottle where they get this water from. So, and I agree with Andy or Andrew, whatever his name was. And why couldn't we boycott the stores, tell them to stop selling the water in the plastic bottles, period, plain and simple. And tell everybody that you need to put a filter on your sink and or in your fridge or whatever, and just drink the water from there and quit buying these plastic bottles. It's crazy.
Thank you, Wendy. Do you have any comments, Marilee?
Well, I know that we are, or feels like when I see all the Nestle advertising on the radio and on TV and even the op-eds that they put, or the pressures that they put in the papers, the latest one saying, we're going to leave North America, we're not going to bottle any more spring water out of North America, and supposedly they left Canada. And so I know the pressure is on them, and I commend everybody who can stop purchasing bottled water, because that's the pressure it's going to take to put an end to these types of industries, and that type of industry is contributing to the very problems that we're experiencing on the globe in terms of plastic filling our oceans, filling our waterways, filling our roadways, getting burned at incinerators, and also manufactured. So we all, as a consumer nation, need to stop buying the things that harm us the most. This harms us beyond just the spring, and it's bad as a spring. But we have to step into this now. 2020 is the year to get off your bottled water expenses, too.
Are you still there?
Marilee, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming back on WMNF Midpoint Monday. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, and thank you to all the callers. Marilee Mulwitz-Gibson with the group Our Santa Fe River. They oppose a permit that could be granted as soon as tomorrow for Nestle to withdraw 1 million gallons of water a day from the North Florida spring system. I'll put the link up on the website, WMNF.org, this afternoon. Thanks to Rob Lori and Frank Knox and DT. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will be back to host Midpoint Tuesday. Stay tuned now for Latino 54, coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, and Sarasota. Thanks so much.